All right. Welcome back to hour two of Shattering Myths. Larry had to run, and we are now joined by Kirk, as well as William, who decided to stick around. And good morning, Kirk.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. There's nothing like 6 a.m. text messages to wake you up. So, and, you know, it's turned out to be a lot of fun. William calling was unexpected, but a fantastic addition. And I'm glad you guys are both here.
Yes, me too. I didn't want to be on the raft alone.
Yeah, no. Definitely. So,
I'm here for you, brother.
Thank you.
So how's your sukkah going?
Well, it was good. We, as I mentioned earlier, we did the astronomical, and we're working on the astronomical calendar, so we wanted to be consistent. So yesterday actually was our big celebration. It's a week-long celebration. We party the first day, and then we just remember all the rest of the week, and then hopefully, like William had said earlier, it's nice to celebrate the eighth day, rather special as well. So we're certainly doing that. But what was interesting is that we have a new covenant member who joined us, and listening and talking with someone who is relatively new to this makes me understand how important it is to review some things. So when you called this morning or contacted me this morning, I thought we might go over some very fundamental things about the Moed Mikros, of what Yahweh said in the covenant that pertains to the Moed Mikros, and then finish off maybe with Sukkah, a little finer detail of Sukkah. If that's okay with everybody, we'll do that.
It works for me.
Okay. As we conclude the seventh mikra called Sukkah, I was going to just throw in a couple of things that I thought were quite interesting about seven. When I first read seven is the answer to everything and yada yada, I said, okay, yeah, fine. But I didn't really realize till I studied much further how much seven plays besides just being the Sabbath and a few of the other things. And the 6 plus 1 is symbol of man is 6, symbol of God is 1, and the 2 together make it perfect. But I have a little list here of all the things that, or a lot of things that I think are quite helpful to someone who is just starting their journey along this pathway. And of course, every seventh day is the Sabbath, the day that we set aside to rest and reflect on Yah's word. Every seventh year is a sabbatical year. Remember, in the old traditions, they would let the land go fallow so they could recover, it could rest, and also where poor people could come by and eat off the fruit. The fruit trees kept growing. The soil kept producing. But they weren't supposed to take it off the thing. That was for people, the birds and the animals, to refresh, and also for people who didn't have any land so that they could eat as well. Then you had a sabbatical year, which was a Yobel year, which is a seventh. And you have every 50, if you recall. You have a seventh month was especially set apart with the feast. There was 7 weeks between Passover and Shavuot. There's a Passover, let's see, the Passover feast lasted for 7 days. The feast we're doing today, the Sukkah, Tabernacles, if you prefer, are 7 days, the 7 day feast. At Passover, you had 14 lambs, that's twice 7, were offered daily. At Tabernacles, you had 14 lambs, twice 7 daily, and 70 bullocks were offered. Now, remember, when they sacrificed these things, that was also food for the people to eat. So it's not a gory thing. We slaughter animals to eat, you know, to get nourishment from. And then there's the Shavuot, which is 7 lambs were offered during Shavuot. So, I mean, besides all the other things that we've talked about quite a lot, 7's a pretty important number to know and to recognize. I just thought that was quite interesting. Any comments on anybody? Y'all feel free to jump in.
Okay. I think you're on point. I mean, okay. 7's very important.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm.
In the covenant relationship and the requirements for the covenant relationship, that's kind of the start of the Moed Mikra, celebrations. The third requirement was to, as you know, was to walk to God and become perfect. Now, you're walking down a path, a pathway, for instance. If you recall in your history books, if you've read any of the old ancient history books, like Tacitus, he describes the early followers of Yahusha as followers of the way. And that begs the question, well, what is the way? And, of course, when we were talking about this yesterday with our friend, it's a little bit confusing on what the way is. And, of course, the way was always, the way that they were following was in the celebration of these seven Moed Mikras.
Right.
For instance, you have, and if y'all allow me just to review these things a little bit for people that maybe are quite new, and maybe this will be helpful.
Please.
But he said to walk to God and become perfect. Well, how do you become perfect? Well, it's through the celebration of the plan that he devised and rejoicing in the plan that he devised to settle the issue of our walking away from him the first time, as Adam and Chawa did when they chose to trust Satan rather than to trust the words of Yahweh. So his plan was straightforward, and it just happened to be seven steps. And, of course, a quick review. The first one, of course, is Passover. Now, everything that we're talking here is pertaining mostly to your soul. Our bodies, we live, we die. The body is not terribly it's important to me right now because I'm dwelling in it, but it's not the ultimate goal is to live forever in this body, of course. The thing that is most you, William, the thing that is most me, is our soul. That is the essence of us. And if that can be transformed into some other being, and it'd be even even better, which it will one day. But the what you're trying to do, the when Passover, what Yahweh did, Yahusha performed as laying his life on the line as the lamb, it was to resolve the issue of death, but not necessarily the issue of death to a human, I mean to a physical body, but that for the soul can live on eternally. So that was resolved in this step, seven steps along the way. That was resolved there. Then, of course, the next day we celebrate Matzah, and these are the three feasts that I'm talking about that are that we celebrate in the spring. Matzah, of course, is settles the issue of sin. The tragedy of Passover, Pesach, if you participate in Pesach and you don't participate in Matzah, of course, then what you would be is your soul could live, theoretically, your soul can live forever. The trouble is, Yah told you in his first statements, in his 10 statements on stone, he will have no other gods around me. You'll have none of this filth with you, and you cannot be. He's perfect, and you have to be perfect to be on a face-to-face basis with him at his, and to be with him. Therefore, we can't sukkah, camp out with him unless we were perfect. Well, I'm not perfect. You know, I know I'm not perfect, but I can be viewed as perfect, and I can be as Abraham. I can be made perfect by this situation. And the Matzah was that situation. When Yahusha died, his soul, as you recall, his soul, when he said, why have you left me? Speaking of the set apart spirit, his soul was sent into Sheol, the place of separation. So the price has been paid for our eternal life, and the Matzah, which is the reason we called it Matzah, because it was an example, a metaphor for sin in Egypt and Mizraim, where it was used as the, while we eat the bread, the matzah bread, which has no yeast in it, was because the house, and you clean out all the matzah, all the yeast from your house, everything that has anything to do with yeast when we celebrate that event, is to be very symbolic to remind you that your sin is being removed. Then the following, if you want to jump in, go ahead. If I'm missing some stuff, go off.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, I believe that the, you know, your body, you know, and removing the yeast is definitely symbolic to your home. I mean, I think when you're taking the removing the yeast from your home, it's a constant reminder that, you know, he paid the price for us and he perfected us, and so, you know, it's a moment to reflect on where we missed the mark, where we were, right, might have fallen short, and observing the Torah and to kind of just say, okay, I got to fix that.
As a teacher, I've become just fascinated with that sounds trite. I don't mean it to sound. I'm just fascinated at how good this guy is, y'all. He lays it out so beautifully as you examine the story. Now, you got to examine the story and really see what's going on. But he's just amazing. He's very patient. He repeats it over and over and over, these things. He gives you this metaphor, that metaphor, this symbol, this whatever. He tells it a million ways where you really can't miss it if you really concentrate on what the words are saying.
Mm-hmm.
The trouble we have, of course, is we primarily speak English. Some of us better than the others.
Mm-hmm.
But and this is spoken in Hebrew, and the depth and breadth of each word is so much more rich than in our language that we miss so much even in the English translation. So that's why it's so important to get all the meanings and study the word in great depth.
Well, when you teach classes, just be sure to give Yahweh the credit when you let them kids know, hey,
yeah,
I'm taking some of Yah's tricks here and using it on you guys.
Indeed. Now, so this in this pathway along the way, he has resolved the issue about life. Your soul now can live forever if you participate in Passover.
Right.
But where you will live, because some people may not know, since we are doing a review, there's three options at death. Your soul is mortal, just like your body.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll cover that as soon as we get back from the break. Okay, we had, William, we'd covered Pesach, Passover, and Matzah. And Bikurim, of course, is the third event of that week, those 3 days in the spring. And, of course, to round it off, is that now that we are alive, that our souls are alive, and now that we are cleansed of sin, the light of the set-apart spirit is on us, therefore there's no darkness where there's light, we celebrate Bikurim. And, of course, Bikurim is also called first fruits, but it is the situation where now we can be adopted, because now we can walk through that door free of sin through the Passover door, the upright poles, and walk through there and become a member of his family. And, of course, with that, you become part of Yah's family. And a royal heritage is not an understatement by any stretch. So, and those are the feast of the first part of the walk, the three feasts of the spring. Then we wait, and talking about, I'm sorry, did you want to comment on
the
curl?
Nope, go ahead.
Okay. And then we have another celebration, our fourth celebration, which is more towards the summertime. It would be 7 plus 7. This course is 49, so you have 7 weeks of 7, and then they add one more day, so you complete it with you start on a Sabbath and end on a Sabbath. So we have 50 days from Bikurim, and then we celebrate Shabbat. Pardon me one second. And Shabbat is a rather significant one. It's called, I think, Pentecost by Christians.
Right.
And the better name, I don't use Greek names very much other than when I'm talking with someone, so we can clarify what we are talking about. But Shabbat, of course, means the promise of 7. It's, once again, the number 7, very powerful in this. And two events happen on Shabbat. Two things are given to these people that are now adopted to us. You know what those are, William?
We're enlightened and empowered.
That's exactly right. We're empowered, and the way I view it is to understand the Torah as we read it. The only prayers I really do anymore, I mean, I talk to God a little bit, but most of the time I feel I'm with Yahweh on this page is you need to shut up and listen to him, and you'll learn a lot more, and you'll answer more of your questions, because he already knows what we need. He said so. And he said, I know your needs. So here's what I think you need, and read the Torah. Study the Torah. Study my words. But also there's a great beauty about this, because this set-apart spirit, the Ruach Kodesh, the spirit will empower you to understand. And bien is the word in Hebrew for understand. So the more that you understand, the better you will be able to share this message of the pathway.
Right.
And then, of course, enrichment. As you said, the second part of that, these are five benefits now we've had. The enrichment part is by association. When you're part of Yah's family, that's a big deal. You share all that he has to give, and you can't get much richer than that from the creator of the universe.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to grasp. Yes, I can tell you, I'll get this, but it's really, if you think about it, very hard. It's like what's going to happen up on Sukkah when you're camping out with Yah. I mean, I can say it's this, that it's going to be like that, but this is way, way above my understanding just yet. So.
Yeah, I mean, it can, you know, especially when you're just hearing this stuff for the first time, right?
Oh, yeah.
It gets a little confusing, but it makes perfect sense when you dig into it and study it out. It all makes sense, and it all ties into each other perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know how we're always talking about the signpost along the way?
Right.
And in ancient culture, they had signposts along the way for if they took their flocks from one pasture to another pasture and grazed in Abraham's day. And those signposts along the way for them were, of course, if you go down to the big rock and you turn left, there's a water hole over there, and you go to 2 miles this way and stuff like that. Well, the signposts along the way for us on this path, of course, are these Moed Mikras.
Right.
And if you stop and pause at each one of these signposts along the way and have a feast, have something good to eat, sit down and talk and have a glass of wine if you wish. I do. And then just bury your head into his word for a while on what he talks about these things. Then the benefits are tremendous. You can't get lost. You can't fall off of the path.
And it's all beautiful.
William and I were having a little aside conversation during the break, and I thought it was quite interesting because we were both the Yehudim were, of course, the Hebrews are the chosen people, and they were entrusted with, they were to be the light in the world, and in many ways they have done that, and the other way. Other ways they've kind of dropped the ball a little bit, and we were talking about these celebrations are written down as something we are to do always. In fact, he says that your children should do this, and your children's children all forever. Olam is forever and ever. So it's never going to end. In fact, even when we celebrate Sukkah after the 1,000 years and Yahweh creates a new world, we will indeed be celebrating these events. That how they schedule it in that new world, I'm not sure, but I know we're going to do it. What in that conversation we were having, we thought it's very sad. And William had some observations this week as we were all the family was studying or enjoying Sukkah, and I thought you might want to share that with us.
Yeah, sure. I mean, what I was sharing with Kirk. And Scott was that I drove by a synagogue. I came out of the gym, and I'm driving home, and I, you know, I drove by Sunday evening, Monday evening. So whether you're observing the astronomical or observational, whichever way you're doing it, you know, there was no excuse, right? They I should have seen a packed house, and I didn't. For Day of Reconciliation, so Yom Kippurim, which, you know, on that day they choose to afflict their souls, which is wrong, but on that day it was a packed house. I mean, there were cop cars. You'd have thought that they were rolling out the red carpet and it was a Hollywood event or something. I mean, you couldn't even drive through. But the last two evenings, nothing at all, not one person, and just broke my heart. You know, it was sad. It was sad because, as you said earlier, they're supposed to be the ones teaching us.
Well, yeah, and the Loi, not the priest. A priest was an invention. They came after they were taken off into Babylon, and they figured out that's a good racket, so they brought it back with them. But there was no priest. There was in the sense of rabbis, that's what I should say. There were priests. Mm-hmm. Those are the Lois, but they were the teachers, and they were also the judges when you had disputes. They said, well, what does the Torah say about this? Because this is my situation, and I want to resolve this issue with my neighbor. You know, so they did they were the court system basically as well. So, based on what the Torah said. And,
right, but even if there's no priest today, right, no Loi.
Yeah, you still have the Torah.
I think it was more in that they were the light of the world and should have led by example.
Right.
Led by example, right? So they should have done it that way. But really, Yahusha, you know, Yahweh is the light of the world. He's the light of everything. And so ultimately, for me, what I take away from that, especially when I hear people say, oh, you know, that's a Jewish thing. It's a Yahweh thing.
It's a Yahweh thing.
And, right, it's a Yahweh thing. And I think the lesson learned there for us is ultimately just observe his Torah.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need to follow anybody but him.
He can speak right to you.
Right.
No, and it's sad how religion, the power of religion. I mean, I'm sure if you went by one of the Christian churches on the same night, you didn't see anybody celebrating Sukkah there either.
No.
And yet they claim they're followers of Yahusha. Of course, they call him Jesus. So that's a whole other discussion there.
Right.
Well, in our review, we had covered the first three and then the fourth one in the summertime, and now we're to the fall, which we celebrated Teruah. And we've had some shows recently on the Teruah when we were celebrating. And of course, the thing we are to do in Teruah is to shout for joy because we're getting close to the end. And also, and we're supposed to shout out a warning to the people who are to let them know that this is the path, and Yah invites you to get on the path, and he invites you to come to him, walk to God, and become perfect. And so and that would be the time that the people, the Christians, would call the rapture. And, of course, it's not a rapture. That's a horrible word. That's when a predator animal grabs hold to a thing. What Yah calls it is the harvest. It's when you reach downhill, grab our hands,
snatched up,
and carry us away. And this is the only, and the reason for this is to remind you, this is the only way to avoid the horrors, the literal horrors that are coming in our lifetime, in our normal lifetime. If we are in the end times, no question about it. We have a timeline. If you read the Torah, it'll tell you what the timeline is, and we'll save that for another discussion. But the God did allow people, his family, he doesn't want them to go through that. And that's the time that we celebrate and shout for joy because he said he will remove us from the harm of the last 7 years of this horrible events that are about to take place. Then we move to step number six, which is Yom Kippurim, which is the Day of Reconciliations. And we've even spoken of that just a minute ago, where people are observing it incorrectly, because Yahweh said it's the time when he does all the work, we rest and appreciate the fact that he has reconciled us. And that that 5 days that will actually take place between Yom Kippurim and Sukkah is when he will return. He returns on Yom Kippurim, and he sets the world straight and cleans up the situation that's there, destroys all the gods and the temples to those gods and the people who just want to serve those gods. So they will be removed. And that brings us to the most wonderful time that we're celebrating this week, which is Sukkah, which means to camp out with Yah. And in the reality, it will be an actual time, a real time and place of when he returns. and we will celebrate with him for 1,000 years, the people that are alive then, who mostly Yisrael and Yehudim, who will recognize who Yahweh is, and they will turn to him and ask him to forgive them and let them join the family. And of course he will, and he puts his Torah in our hearts so that we'll know, and they will live for 1,000 years and grow the family. So and that's going to occur. If you would like to know the timeline, it's on 33. I mean, it started from 2033 is when those events will take place.
Right. And, rapidly approaching, isn't it?
Which happens to be, besides the little blood moon reference that y'all did earlier, which was quite interesting, it is also a Yobel year. And,
right.
Of course, I know you know what a Yobel is. There are three events that take place on a Yobel.
Right.
And, of course, there is the all our debts are forgiven on a Yobel, which is pretty interesting because I want all my sins and everything to be forgiven, all my shortcomings, all the things that I owe. I would like to be forgiven. The slaves are set free. We're all slaves to this world, unless we walk away from it. They have the power in the world, and they can Mizraim or Babylon, the churches, the military, the government, the dictatorships. They all control us. They have a great deal of power on us. So they. So we are enslaved in that sense, and we'll be set free.
Yeah, and a lot of people, they get silly, and they're like, well, I can't leave my country. I can't walk off the planet, you know. And it's a symbolic thing where, you know, come to trust and rely upon Yahweh.
Don't trust upon them.
Right.
And
don't trust upon man.
Don't celebrate them. Don't put your old flag out and be patriotic.
Right. Right.
And
I look at the prophets, and that's what they did. You know, if you look at Moshe, if you look at Eliyahu, and so on and so forth, I mean, they wholeheartedly leaned on him, I mean, in every aspect of their lives. You know, when they came to know him and understand him, I didn't, especially Eliyahu, when you read 2 Kings, it blows me away how he stood up on that hill and soldiers went after him, and you know, they said, if you're a man of Yah, come down. He said, if I'm a man of Yah, then may fire come down upon you and consume you. And it did. It blew me away. I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, so 150 men couldn't take one guy out. I mean, that's trusting in Yah, buddy.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Interesting. You know, interesting thing about the Yobel is forgiveness, is death forgiveness, and the slaves are free. And then there's the thing that just occurred to me, is that land is returned.
Right.
Now, that's the key. Obviously, we've talked about it, Yada, and I've talked about that on one of the shows where we talked about the Yobel, and I know on the Friday night show, everyone talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
In regards to, it's a wonderful situation, so it keeps family generations like the Rockefeller types building these powerful, powerful wealth that ultimately will corrupt them and ultimately will give them great power over the community. And I've always thought of it just about like that. But what happens is, in that land return, any sale would really be a lease, because you have to return. You know, if you sold land, it has to be returned, right?
Right.
Therefore, that makes it a very temporary land ownership, right?
Right.
And a temporary dwelling on that land, which is just like sukkah. This is a temporary, we're asked to be a temporary, we're trusting in Yahweh, and we're living in temporary dwellings. Sukkah.
Wow.
To me, I just thought, well, that, you know, everything, once again, everything Yahweh teaches, he teaches, there's the, obviously, in your face, and then there's a lot of subtle things. And
the
more you read it, the more you say, oh, well, that ties in with this, and that ties in with that, and that's the excitement I get from reading the stuff. And some of them are, oh, big deal. Some of it is, but to me it was a big, you know, to me, little things mean a lot. So So,
To me too. Me too. I mean, every bit of it. He's a perfect communicator. Nothing's wasted with him. Every word is meaningful. And so, what about the eighth day, Kurt?
The eighth day.
You know, yeah, the eighth day. I think it's important that we touch on that.
Okay.
You know, seeing as it represents infinity, right? When you turn it sideways, it's eternity with Yahweh, and we will witness the creation of a new universe. I mean, that's going to be awesome.
Yeah, and you know,
wow.
Eight is eternity, and you have to speculate a little bit here. He tells us, he gives them some clues of the things that are going to happen in there, but what will happen, just to keep people on the timeline that may be relatively new to some of these things, is that, of course, people will be born in this millennium of Sukkah, this thousand years at the end of man's reign on Earth will last 6,000 years. That's the line of Adam, not all mankind, because there were people prior to Adam's line,
correct,
which the Torah tells you about. But the line of Adam lasts for 6,000 years, and at the end of those 6,000 years, of course, we celebrate these 1,000 years with when Yah returns, and he dwells with us for those 1,000 years. Now, the people that have turned to Yahweh on Yom Kippurim have received the Torah in their heart, and they've joined, and they understand these things. And they... But they will have children, and they will have families, and the families will grow, and those people will not have the Torah in them. They will be like we are in the state we are now, where they will will always have free will. They will have free will, and they will choose. They will have to choose whether they want to be part of Yah's family and celebrate the feast or not, or do the things that Yah will ask them to do, which is all volitional. They get to choose. And at the very end of that, before we go to eternity, to the eighth day, or the symbolic eight, is he will literally free HaSatan, Satan, the adversary, Alal Ben Shakal, will be let out again, and he will come back to earth at the very end of it, of that 1,000 years, to and gather up his people, people who lean towards him, would choose him. And there'll be a last little fight, and then it'll be over forever. But those people have to have a choice, because if there's and we were talking about this yesterday, is there's no love unless you have a choice.
Right.
And so why does Yah have to do this? Because you have to have a choice to not love him in order to love him. You have to have a choice to want. You know, if you have no choice but to be married because you've been sold off as a slave, then that's not a choice. That's not even a marriage. That's just slavery. But if you have a choice, and you do it of your own volition, then it means something. That's how you can love and express your love for someone.
You can't force a relationship.
No, nope. You can't lock somebody in the closet and say, you're going to be mine. You know, that's not the way. You might own their body, but you don't own their heart. You know, so he's going to do the same thing for there. Then we get to go to that wonderful eight. The eternity, because then he's going to make a whole new world. But why don't you share what you think about all that?
Well, I think one of the things that was profound for me in reading that was when there will be people who still walk away from Yah after spending all that time with him.
Isn't that amazing?
That blew me away. But then on the flip side of the coin, I was like, well, wait a minute. You know, when he freed Yisrael from Mitzrayim, you know, it was only 40 days. They were running amok.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, well, think about that for a minute. He just destroyed the greatest army in the history, in that part of history. They've seen all these enormous things. He runs them up to Yisrael first. And says, here it is, and they say, oh, they got some tall people down there, some giants.
Mm-hmm.
And he is just up to here with it.
Right.
You know, I said, okay,
right.
And I'll just start with a new generation, so I'm not going to kill you. We're just going to go out there, and we'll just live out in the desert for 40 years, and I'll feed you and keep you clothed for 40 years till we get a new generation, and then I'm all for them the same deal. righteous.
Right, right.
Why?
So,
what were they afraid of?
I don't know. It's just, you know, it goes back to when, you know, in the past I've heard you and Yada talk about, you know, where Yahweh spoke to them from the mountain. They were afraid.
Yeah.
It's like, my goodness, you know, he was there, and then in the seventh day they lived with him for 1,000 years, and they still turn their backs on him, and that just blows me away. But then I think about us, right? I think about people here today who have the Torah. How many people have read it and turned their backs on them?
Or even care?
No. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Or
yes.
Don't even care. Yeah.
Well, Terry says you either the reason for that is that you don't care. I probably won't. She has about 3 or 4 things that they don't care. They don't believe it could be true.
Right.
There's something else she says too. This is so. Forgive me, Terry.
Okay.
But you know, but it's just they're not. They don't get it.
Right.
But I think she is right. When we often talk about it, it's mostly an attitudinal thing. They just don't care. Why won't you care? I don't know what that is. But it goes back to the statements that Yahweh wrote in stone with his own hand. Stone being symbolic of something that's permanent. He wanted you to know this is really big stuff. And he says in there that I will deliver unmerited favor and mercy to all those who love me. And then he also says that it's only going to be I will only offer this to a few thousand.
Thousands, right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Thousands among billions and billions of people. I don't know how many were there before the flood, but it was probably a large population. I mean, it's certainly enough land there, and it's good enough land before. Remember, all that water was not salty water. So everything was a spring then. So, I mean, it
was
a great fertile area in the Middle East at that point.
I was talking to a friend of mine, very intelligent guy, you know, has all of these degrees and so forth, and he's a Christian, and you know, and we were talking, and he says, "Well, what are you telling me? Are you telling me that I'm going to hell?" And I explained how, you know, it's not hell in the way that he thinks, it's Sheol. And I said, "Look, I'm not saying that. I'm just telling you what Yahweh's word says." I said, "You know, I don't ever say that a Christian's going to Sheol or hell or anywhere because everyone can change, you know, if they choose to. You know, if you choose to change, you will. But according to his word, you know, he's not compromising. And so if everybody were going to heaven, and, you know, and I've heard Yada say this, and I agree, then earth would be no different than heaven. And so why would we want to be there?
Why would you want to empower people to the degree that he's talking that have an attitude that most of the world has?
Right.
My gosh, you couldn't get...
Because I hate this world right now. I really do. I'm sorry.
Every day I'm getting...
Day. Yeah.
My wife says, you know, you're turning into Larry. Yeah.
That's not a bad thing.
Not a bad thing, but it's a little uncharacteristic to me. I don't usually holler first, but now I'm going, dead gummy. Yeah. Dead gummy.
Larry's uncompromising.
Yeah.
He's not playing
yeah.
with anybody.
I mean,
So I'm just going to forewarn everybody, if you're looking for Larry on FB and you want to play religion with him, you're in for a bad ride.
He has no tolerance. He's like Yahweh. He has absolutely no tolerance.
But yeah, you know, look, everybody can choose. We all have free will. The one thing I would say is don't squander that gift. You know, see, if you truly love the creator of all things, the creator of the universe, then seek him. Seek him with all your might, heart, soul, and strength, and you'll find him.
Yeah.
And question everything, even what we share here on this show. Yeah. Question it. You know, dig deeper. Don't trust us.
No. It's there. All I can do is repeat as best I can understand what Yahweh said based on the words and analyzing the words. And that's
right.
All we have. And that's all Yada Yah books and Intro to God are. They are as fine a translation, and what I've done, because I've been down the road with scholars before in my Christian walk as an adult. Mm-hmm. What I chose to do first, just to protect ourselves, so to speak, I want to make sure that what is being said can be proven. So I got the books and stuff. I'm not good with a computer. I just all that stuff, but I can certainly read a book. And I've got I got the dictionaries and the interlinearies and all those sort of things. And started looking up each one of these words and finding what people said about them. And I can assure you that most of the stuff that is written there, I have gone over a lot of it. And the reason I may sound like somebody who's just hanging around going, yeah, you're right, is because, yeah, that's what that word means.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and this is the pathway that Yahweh devised for us to walk to Him and become perfect so that we can live with Him forever. And it's not a complicated plan. It is deep. The more you unveil it, the more you look at even down to the letters, the more that you'll see. And it is the proper path and the one you want to be on.
And if you know the truth, you'll never believe a lie.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
It's a pleasure, Kurt. Thank you.
Thank you,
Scott.
Yes, thank you, guys. I really appreciate you guys coming on.
Okay.
I will talk to you guys all sometime soon.
Happy Suka.
Take care, guys.
Happy Suka. Yes, all of you.